11:55. Interesting time to set a session, but thank you all for putting your lunch plans off a little later and coming to join me. My name's Darrell Webster, and you've just come into the door of the most self-centered session of the Tech Ed this year. It's all about Office 365 and what's in it for me. And what I want to get us to think about to start with is a statement that can invoke a reaction within users and IT pros alike. And that statement, we're moving to, now it could be any system, it could be Office 365, it could be a new financial system, but this statement invokes quite a reaction. So whether this decree comes from above, sideways or below, we get a reaction. Users, they begin to worry about change. They think about what's going to happen. IT pros, they worry about a couple of things. Two questions. How do I make it work? And how am I going to get my people to use it? So I have my son Daniel here. He agreed to an appearance with an appearance fee. Get me some Lego, Dad. And as IT pros, he's going through and he's answering that first question. He's trying to put it all together. He's working through those instructions really dutifully and page by page. And as IT pros, we might do that. We might go to TechNet articles, go to blog posts to see the journey that other people have travelled. And we're trying to find the best practice to get in and do it. So that's the how do I make this work? And that's a question that we're quite well familiar with. But one other question that we get landed with often as IT pros, and perhaps it's not really up to us. It's more of a whole organisation responsibility. How do I get my people to use it? And that's more of a personal question. It's more of a cultural question. And I say culture, I mean our organisational culture. It's difficult to answer for us as IT pros, and we often throw IT at it to try and solve it. But it is a personal question too, because when we are changing a system, we're dealing with the tools that people use every day. Personal, right? So if I go onto a builder's site and I sneak along and I take away the favourite hammer and the favourite drill and I swap it out for something else, I'm sure to get the bash. I'll get in trouble because I'm messing with something that they use every day, you know? So when we change our tools and our people, it's personal. And that's why it's perhaps more of a question that we have to answer as an organisation, more than just IT pros. So what are our users really interested in? What's in it for me? That's all I care about. If I come in the next day after an IT changeover, a system changeover, I want to be able to keep working. I want to be able to find my stuff. I want to be able to keep on doing what I've got to do and do it effectively. And by the way, if you've given me some new bells and whistles, I want to know that they're going to give me some tangible benefits. What's in it for me? That's what they care about. So Daniel's pretty happy. He's built it up as the instructions have showed. And he's realising that benefit. What's in it for me? I got Lego. Awesome. Thank you, Dad. But we come to some questions when we're thinking about a changeover of a system. Some self-centric questions. These could be questions that we ask at the beginning of every day that we go to work. Where is my stuff? Where am I working today? What do I need to use to work today? What am I going to pack in my bag? Who am I going to see? Those sorts of things. How do I keep in the loop? Where are my colleagues? All these sorts of questions. You know, notice the font there. I chose the color because I'm trying to highlight my, I, me. It's all about me, my self-centric questions about starting the work. Now, when we think about bringing in a new system, user adoption, we have some similar questions, but some of these might be difficult for us to answer. How difficult is this going to be to learn? You know, you're changing things on me. How am I going to take this on board? How different is it going to be to what I currently use? What is it going to cost me? And it's not necessarily time, is it? It can be brain power. Oh, not necessarily money, I mean. It's definitely going to cost you time. And I sort of think back to a particular reference within Lethal Weapon 4. Perhaps this reference is something that you might feel, I'm too old for this shift to the new system. Why should I change? Why should I change? Change can be stressful. And that's what we've got to try and manage and think about when we're addressing our user adoption strategy. So we're going to try and answer these questions. We're going to look at Office 365 today, and we're going to point out some things about it that will help us with user adoption. What's similar, using what's similar, and what's familiar? Pointing those things out. Accessing the personal. And certainly, looking at our working styles and our preferences and how we like to work. So if we start off with what's familiar, now you might think, okay, am I going to be talking about necessarily familiar things between the products? No, I'll start at the hardware layer, the physical layer. Does everyone remember that little diagram of hardware layer, physical, is it plugged in right, work your way up, those sorts of things? Same thing. Familiarity starts with what we're holding. So I did have a quick wander through the aisles there to see what you're all using. Some of you are using all sorts of phones. Let's just do a quick poll. Who's using Apple today? Hold it up if you have. Yep. How about Android? Yeah. And Windows? Okay, I'm not going to try and get into an argument about which one's better. That's quite a punch-up fight, okay? But what I'm saying is that we're better off to use what's familiar to us and not change our tools. I'm not going to sneak onto your building site and swap out your hammer and your drill. I want you to use something that's familiar to you. So if we're putting in a new system as IT pros, sometimes we sit and we think about, hardware refresh? Do we change everything out? Is this the opportunity to give new hardware? Is that the best thing? And I want us to just think about that question as we move through this. It's maybe a scenario that we've used in the past as we change out systems. We're kind of tricky, IT pros. And like, just think of a couple of IT managers that I used to have. Now, they were very tricky. Maybe they use it like this. New equipment, flash new laptops, flash new phones, little carrot. Here you go. It's been overdue, but by the way, we're changing the system. Hopefully you won't notice that. We've dazzled you with all the new kit that you've got, and that you won't notice that. So we have used that to an advantage in the past. But what I'm going to suggest is that a hardware refresh, maybe you want to put that off. So we look at what we do have, and we think about it in terms perhaps of Office 365. Can we use our existing hardware? What's on the desk? What's on people's laps? What's in their hands? Can we use it? Sure, we can do that. Can we allow BYOD? Yes, Office 365 allows that too. So we've got a couple of options. Rather than taking the opportunity to dangle the carrot, we could just put that part of it off. Now, I say that using existing hardware is a good idea, whether it be your own or something that's been on your desk for a little while, because when you're shifting in a new system, you don't want to make too many changes. It's a good user adoption strategy to try and use what you've already got, because at the physical layer, something that's familiar helps to learn. We don't have to learn new buttons. We don't have to think about what we've got to drag along with us to the new site. It's user-centric. If we change the tools at the same time as the system that we're putting in, then we're changing two things. And as IT pros, we should know that if we change too much at once, then we're going to make things difficult. You know, we use that as a troubleshooting strategy, don't we? Don't change too many things at once or you won't know what you fixed. Well, maybe we're okay with that. We just walk away and, hey, it's fixed, it's all right. If we change too much, we're going to be making people go into an unfamiliar world with unfamiliar tools. It's a big speed bump. And it's not going to help user adoption. So we get to familiarity. We've gone through familiarity with hardware. Let's think about similarities. And software similarities are important. We know that if we're going from using Office on a desktop with Office 2010 or 2007, and we're moving to Office 365, that there are similarities we need to point out. And they're important. If there's something someone needs to learn that's completely new, they have to have a compelling reason to do so. If you're going to shift into something completely different, you better be prepared to put some good training courses together. But you also have to put across the benefits of that software. Now, it's not too hard with Office 365. If you've been familiar with using the ribbon, it's there. It's there since 2007. It's there in SharePoint Online. It's there within Office 2013. So we're not shifting to something completely different. But we do have a responsibility as IT pros, and maybe to try and push it to our HR or the training part of our organisation to try and get some of that training in, to show some of those differences. So there is another fact that we know about learning. The new is best based on what's previously known. This is a fact. You know, when we grow up, we're babies, we learn various things. We learn to walk, then we learn to run. Okay, some people get around the other way. I don't know how they do that. But we build on what we know. And that's important, particularly with user adoption of Office 365. It's a simple fact. So we are going to build on what we know. We're going to point those things out. Now we get to the... So we point out what's familiar. Just a little recap. The hardware that we might be using. We can run using the devices that we've all held up and said, I'm an Apple person, I'm an Android person. And we can point out what's similar within Office. So now we get to the personal. How does Office 365 cater to the personal? When I say personal, I get back to that word my that we saw on a few slides back. My settings, my files, my locations, my world. That's what I'm dealing with in personal. So let's tip that on our head. Maybe we've done this. Maybe we've been really evil in our organizations. How do we decrease user adoption? This is how we might do it. We move all the documents and systems to a completely different location and set all the preferences back to default. I'll get to that later. And expect people to find their own way. No training, no direction. I've heard this too often. We hire smart people, they'll figure it out. Yeah? It's not too much different. We're moving to something else, but they'll figure it out. They're smart. That's how you decrease user adoption, doing all those things. And some of us are doing that very well. So where are my documents? Where are my settings? Let's think about when we roll out a new machine to a desktop, to someone. Give them a new desktop, new laptop. How long does it take you to get it back to just the way you like it? Could be a couple of days, could be a week, could be a few months. Going back through and changing all those little preferences that we like within Office can take some time. Unless we've got some help, maybe we know how to export settings and do those sorts of things, but most people don't know how to do that. So it could take some time to get back to what we like. And I'm saying that reorientation, sitting down and trying to get it all back together again, trying to find our stuff, our way of working, wastes time. Definitely. How many people dread coming into the office on a Monday after the system changeover has been through the weekend? They come in, they see the IT pros and their bloodshot eyes, unshaven faces. I've been there. Phone system changeovers, and they think, oh, crap. This does not look good. I'm going to go back home now, and hopefully it'll be all sorted out the next day. It's time wasted. So let's look at a couple of things within the office and perhaps how we expect it to work and how it has become personal to us. I say a path recently trod. We now can go to Office and we can see the documents that we've been working in, the recent locations that we've been working in. That's cool. That's fine. It's been around for a few generations of Office now. But one thing that we have come to expect now, too, is being able to get to documents in cloud locations. And that's really become a lot easier since Office 2013. We might have been able to do it beforehand via VPN and have, like, our roaming locations and various things like that. But what about roaming or trying to find those cloud locations? Now I go to an example of settings. This is just one of the things that I like to change when I get a new machine and it doesn't roam. I work in Outlook, basically, by when emails are coming in, let's say after this, after TechEd or something, I'll go to who emailed me last and I'll work my way up the list. And there's a setting within Outlook which by default, if I close or delete a message, it'll work its way down the list. So I always come in and I change that. It's just the way I like it, but it's the way it works. It helps me to service the people who have been waiting the longest for my emails, working my way up the list. So how have we done this in the past, traditionally? How have we tried to keep people in touch with the way that they work and what's personal to them? So our first example, we can carry our environment around on the single device, our laptops, our computers, and our devices that we take with us. So that's one way to do it, sure. Hopefully it doesn't blow up or we get lost, but that's fine. The second option, maybe we're lucky enough to have a remote desktop system or Citrix, and we can host that environment on and access it from many devices. Now, we might still be restricted in how we do that. There might be a few things that we have to obey, and we've got a standard operating environment, but we can take our environment with us. Third option, of course, we can roam. We can roam our environment, and that might be, again, on a network, over a VPN, roaming settings, but it's to limited devices. So we think about Office 365 and what we might be moving to. It is personal. We still have those roaming places and recent documents, but it also roams some basic settings. Most recently used documents, you might have a custom dictionary, maybe notebooks that are within various places. So we can roam some of those basic settings. And what I'm saying is, as we're moving to those sorts of things, moving to Office 365, we'll be able to retain those. Now, what I'm hoping to see in future editions is more of those settings being roamed. So we'll see what comes. What we are seeing now, too, is if you go into something like OneDrive for Business, you can see documents that might be in common with your colleagues. Now, who heard that Delve had been released just a couple of days ago? Yeah, just one. Who's using Office 365 in this room? Not as many as I thought. Okay. So Delve is one level again, that it goes out using an Office Graph system to be able to find all the connections that you have between people that you work with, documents that you're working with, messages, Yammer posts, all those sorts of things. So it's becoming more and more personal. Now, what I mean by preferential is our working style. How do we work? And probably at this time, I'm going to spin over to a noteboard and get a few suggestions. Thinking about working style, places that we work, times that we work, and how we use our tools. So let's just start with locations. Where are some of the places that you work? Some of the obvious ones. Just shout them out. The office. Very good. Home. Airport. On the plane. Yep. Someone else's office. Yeah. So at your customer's place. Okay, so those are a few locations. What about the times that we work? I like to work early in the morning and get a few things done before the kids get up, trying to connect with other people that are still open in some other time zone. So that's one. Does anyone here have the privilege of working in flexi time? Yeah, that's kind of cool. Being able to fulfill your hours within a certain period of time and stretch them out. But what about this one? This is one we probably don't think about so much. The now. I need to work now. I've just got a call. I need to get some information now. I need to jump on and check some things and respond to someone now. That's something that we use as a working style. How about how we work? It might be in person or online. Maybe we crowdsource. And one way that I like to use, and I'm working across different devices, is I don't try and fill out a whole reply to an email on a phone. I flag it, come back to my desktop or my laptop, and respond to it there. So flag and flesh out later. So there's different ways that we do work, and all sorts of combinations of these in various different situations. That's our working style. So we need to support this working style on what we're moving to. If we're going to change people and expect them to work in a different way, then that's going to make user adoption difficult. So we need to have something that's flexible and supports all the different working styles. And this is Office 365. So if our different working styles can be supported by the new system, then they're more likely to use it. They don't have to change too much. So what we'll do is we'll look through a few of these things. Some of these things you'll be familiar with. But we'll start off with talking a little bit about Office. One thing that I was surprised about when I saw Office 2013 was this fella here up in the corner. You know? I'm signing into Office now. What does that mean? So if you have Office 2013 and maybe you don't have Office 365, what might you see there? You'll see your network login. What does that mean? It means that Office itself has been able to access the documents on your network. So if we don't, if we have Office 365 or Microsoft account signed in and used there, then we can roam some of these settings. It means also that we can access the documents and the different locations directly from Office. What we see too here is something else that might roam. Our PIN documents. Who pins documents within Office? Anyone here? Just a few? It's actually a really good feature. You know, I know maybe we might work in and out of all sorts of documents, but I'm authoring them a lot, all the time, or working with manuals. I mean, you might see here this Office 365 School Essentials manual. Working in that all the time, I pin that. When I pin it here, it's pinned wherever I sign into Office and in my OneDrive for Business too. So let's get into it. We'll open up one of these just as an example because we need to be able to show the connection. Okay, so never mind the content there. But because I'm in a document now that's stored in SharePoint Online, I've got a few other options that I can do. Let's have a look first of all at our account. So you might not have been able to play around with this much, but I've got a lot of connected things within Office 2013 here. I've connected my Microsoft account, so that's why I get all sorts of things like Facebook and LinkedIn that I've also connected. But it gives me access to my OneDrive personal, you know, the consumer storage. I've also got a test account, my own Office 365 account, and I work for SharePoint. So we're all using Office 365, and I can access all these locations because I've connected it into Office. So we see that when we go into our recent documents and our locations. We get that new column now, perhaps one that people have been complaining about a little. They look at the computer icon at the very bottom, and they say, that's where I want to get to. I want to get to those documents. So we're getting some guidance, and it's almost been channeled a bit. Say, look, here's your cloud storage first. That's where you can go into. And you can get straight to it without having to go to a browser and within SharePoint Online. You'll be able to go into those shared documents. And you'll get that semi-browser experience within your open and dialog box. So that's useful. But the other thing that when we're signing into Office, one of the benefits, of course, is being able to share, being able to get to this way of sharing documents without having to go to our browser. So these are the sorts of things, I'll work through them quickly, but these are the sorts of things we need to point out to our users to show them the benefits, that they don't have to necessarily go to a browser and click and wait. They can invite people from this dialog box. They can get a sharing link. And this is something that was added a few months back, but it was coming more in line with that OneDrive experience of being able to give someone a link without having to send them an email, allowing anyone who holds that link to be able to share that document. And we're familiar with the different email options, Now, we can send as an attachment, but we're trying to channel people to send a link, get people to the one source of truth and work on that document from there. So there's plenty of options there within Office 2013, which help us to be able to work within the Office 365 environment without actually having to visit a browser. Now let's have a look at some of the things within OneDrive for Business. 1 terabyte? My goodness, I'm going to have some trouble trying to fill that up. That's really generous. But more than it being just a personal drive, it's becoming almost like a personal directory. So now within OneDrive for Business, I can see the documents that I've followed. What does followed documents mean? Well, to me, it's a bit like having favorites for documents. Instead of how I might have had to do this in maybe Office 2010, I might have to save a favorite into my browser for a document in a cloud location. Within SharePoint, I can follow that document and I can get updated about what's happening. And wherever I sign into this, I can see those followed documents. Shared with me, that was another recent one over the last few months. There's an interesting scenario with this. It's okay with small groups, medium groups. So I have no power about what's showed in here. I'm relying on Jack to at some point unshare it so that my screen's not full. Now you see in this scenario, I've got Jack as a student. And what I've seen in schools is they've paused and said, okay, we'll come to SharePoint Online at some point, but right now we'll just start using OneDrive for Business. And all the students start to share all their assignments, and this screen starts to get very full. So it's okay for small and medium, not so much for the large scenario. But it's definitely useful. It saves us from having to go to that email that says, I've invited you into this document, trying to find that link. You can get to it from here. Our site folders, I quite like this one. Whatever site that I've created, whatever site that I've followed as a member, I can now browse those document libraries directly from OneDrive for Business. So the example that I'm using today, I'm using a science class, and I can go straight to the document library and then straight into the site. One place that I have to go to. Just one, to be able to find all those document libraries that I'm interested in. So there's other various things about OneDrive for Business, but one thing that I'll just switch over to now to talking about is working across different devices, my working style. So as I do that, has someone here got a business card that I can just use briefly? Anyone along here? Oh, what I'll do. Oh, yeah, excellent. Thank you. So the scenario is that I'm out and about talking to people, maybe at an event like this. And rather than, thank you, Erica, yeah. rather than keeping all these business cards in the back of my pocket, rather than looking for some expensive system to track all these down, I'm just going to use OneNote on my phone and take a picture of it. And what I will do when I, let's get out to some light here. Accepting that, who remembers in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder? It was that scene where Mike TV was on a platform and he was being beamed into 1,000 pieces. What I'm counting on now is, those 1,000 pieces that have quickly assembled a lot faster than when I practiced this demo before. This is good. Thank you, Erica. I won't charge you for any advertising. But what I'm getting at here is that as a simple way of illustrating working across different devices, OneNote, I'm a big person using OneNote, I love it, that I don't have to know a lot about the system. I can have all my information roaming and accessible from different devices, even from within the browser, which is what you're seeing there. And also within here, if it's synchronized. That will synchronize in a little while. And, of course, with OneNote on my desktop. Is anyone here using OneNote within their team? That's good. I want to see more hands maybe next year if I get to do a talk about OneNote. Very easy to use. You don't have to know HTML programming. You just jump on the page, share whatever you want, and have it synchronized within your team. So yeah, as you see, it's synchronized to the browser, but it's taken a little while to come through the desktop. Good thing I'm not depending on that too much. So one thing I do like to do with OneNote also is share it and be able to run meetings so that everyone's taking notes within that. You might have gathered I was the guy who was trying to get people on board with this thing, a shared notebook for tech ed, getting people to maybe take their notes, share them, and all combine them. So thankfully there's one person that's looked at the tweets and maybe said, oh, yeah, I'll be part of that. But this is to illustrate that I've been able to share, you know, notes about tech ed and, you know, the keynote speech and the like. So this is to illustrate, of course, being able to work across different devices. Supports my working style. So what I want to get to now, something else that's really important within our user adoption. Listening to our people, listening to our users. Maybe this is something that we're a little scared of as IT pros. Perhaps because we hear a lot of complaints, we don't hear a lot of positive comments coming back. But it is important, especially in your user adoption strategy. Moving into Office 365, we need to let people feel like they've been listened to. Rolling out a system is not a one-time event. You know, and some people do this. They put something in, and then they walk away. I spray and walk away. Yeah, it's not that. You've got to continue and continue to support it. So down in the IT department, we're all ears, aren't we? Sometimes we hear a little more than what we should. But what I'm going to encourage us to do is to make use of the tools within Office 365 to create this area of being able to listen, being able to give feedback. Because user-centered feedback is important. We need to hear what's going on. We need to get that ongoing conversation going. So we think about this in terms of how we're going to do this. We're going to try and create some community-based support, so maybe that takes a bit of pressure off us as IT pros. We're going to encourage champions. That's not a new concept, getting someone from each different department to be heading up the charge. When we're selecting our champions, who are we usually choosing? Is it the team leader? Not usually, hey. It's usually the person who is leaned on when a new person joins the team. They've got this knack of being able to patiently work with the newbies and show them the new tools. And I want us to just think about that when we choose our champions for bringing Office 365 in. When we're setting up this community, being able to listen, we're also making it easier for new employees. So using the platforms they're going to talk about soon, they'll be able to go there and ask the frequently asked questions and also be part of a community that can help answer those questions. So we need to communicate before, during, and after the fact, after the rollout. So let's look at a couple of these platforms. We might use SharePoint Community Sites. This is good. It's built in into SharePoint Online. It's a traditional forum format, so we can follow threads and we can post that way. It allows us to post in rich content. So if we show people how to put in screenshots or be able to dress up their font or link to things, then it, you know, it's capable of doing that. But one thing I like about it is the reputation side of it. That being able to encourage people to contribute to this community and seeing their reputation grow, it's really interesting how people begin to compete. They begin to say, oh, you know, I've got more points, so now I'm further up the level. I can achieve badges and things. So that's one good feature about that, and it's the concept of gamification. It might not be new to some of you, but it does work, even at this simple level. Another thing, too, that SharePoint Online's community sites do well is featured discussions. It's like pinning something at the top and saying, hey, this is important, check it out. Of course, the other platform that's available to us within Office 365 is Yammer. This is a slightly different format, newsfeed format. So if you like Threads, go with the other one. If you want to see news format with Threads, then go with Yammer. So you still have your replies and various things, but as someone replies to it, of course, it bumps up the top. The other thing with Yammer is, of course, we can use topics and hashtags. So that's good. I can follow a particular topic. Maybe it's the topic rollout, and I get information about that. But it's more in parallel, too, with Exchange, within distribution groups. So I can create a group, and it can be public or private. And what I'm going to show you soon, one of the strategies, I guess, of using Yammer, is creating a private group for your pilots. And it works well with email and Office integration, too. So let's have a quick look at a couple of these platforms. So first of all, we're logged in as Jack. He's a average user, and I'm looking to him to be a pilot. So what I've done is I've created a site-specific site template called the site called the community site template, and I'm able to create different categories. What I've done is I've tried to think about moving people through the adoption process. So let's just sort of forget about general at the moment. But we have a group of pilots. We want to pick our champions that are going to help us get Office 365 going. And we're going to get them to help seed some content into this community. Because there's nothing worse than going to a community site or even a Yammer network and seeing the tumbleweed blow past. Everyone's standing back and going, ooh, what's going to happen? Is anything going to happen? A lot of people are, you know, a bit antsy about making that first contribution. So our pilots, they're going to come in, they're going to be familiar with Office 365, they're going to start pointing out some of the things that might be an issue, and they're going to contribute to the community. So, you know, that's kind of what I've done. I've begun to post a few things within this Office 365 preparation group. The next phase, we've got our pilots, and now we're going to start setting up a space, the preparation category, which will allow people to ask some questions about what it is, and it'll be our place that we can communicate and say, we're going to run this training workshop. It's going to be running, you know, as I said here, a one-hour introduction, module one, what's new and different. You remember I said that some businesses, organizations, they say, oh, we hire smart people, they'll figure it out. This is really important. If any module, run at least this one, if you're really short on training funding or being able to set that time aside, at least run a small workshop of a nominal size regularly to point out the differences. This is where it was in this previous version you have. Now it's over here. And by the way, here's this thing that might help you work a little better. So I've used the community sites for doing that. And I can also use Yammer in a similar fashion. So the difference with Yammer, and one of the key differences here with rolling it out, is that I can create a private group. In our community, so our SharePoint community, there's nothing private in there, in a sense. It's categories, it's open, whoever has access to that community can get in there and see it. But within a Yammer community, I can create private groups, and I might want to do that with a pilot group. Because maybe they're going to bring up certain things and certain questions that I want to address off to the side, and then we'll move it out for the general population. So we do have our top guns. And then we move them into the preparation phase as well. So the good thing about that is, you know, as you can see with my access, I can see all the groups that I have access to. Jack's had a few questions about, you know, how are we going to make that intranet easier to find? Good question. You know, it's often a thing that people, when they get Office 365, they think, how am I going to find my way back to that home site? And so we've kind of addressed that, and within that discussion saying, we're going to use promoted sites. We're going to try and create that tile so that people can find it. So those are a couple of things that we can use out of the box with Office 365 to create our communities and try and facilitate our user adoption, helping people to feel like they're being listened to. Interesting how it keeps going back to that first slide. So Daniel's got to a point where you saw him before, he had made his Lego just out of the book, just the way he liked it, but he's also customized. That's no longer a fire engine anymore. That's a freaking thing with wings and a fire and water cannon on top, and he's really excited about it. That's what we do with Office too, don't we? We customize it. We make it and shape it and change it to how we work. We customize it to our working style. So let's just go over some of these key building blocks. I'm sorry for the analogy and talking about Lego, but it fit. About how we're going to help people to bring on Office 365 and adopt it. Firstly, we're working with things that are familiar. Let's think about the physical layer. Do we really want to do a hardware refresh at the same time as rolling out Office 365? Maybe you want to put a pause on that. Allow people to use what's on their desk, on their lap, in their hands, or maybe even their own gear. Might be a good strategy. Point out what's similar. Run that module one workshop of, hey, this is what's changed. Do that at the very least. Now, we are moving to something that's familiar, but people still need to know where things have moved. The ribbon's still the ribbon, but maybe we've got a few options there that have changed and are different. Point out what's personal about Office 365. The Roam settings. OneDrive for Business is not just a home drive, it's also a place that you can create that space and that directory for yourself. Take advantage of those simple sharing options. Point these out to our users. Show them the personal side of things in terms of their working style. Maybe there's some things that they don't know that Office can do that will support the way that they work. It's nice that Office 365 is where it is because you can access it from anywhere. So we can use it across our devices, whatever they are, Android, Apple, etc. And we've got to listen. We've got to keep that ongoing conversation going throughout our adoption. So maybe I actually regretted leaving this in because I know how much people hate this song. Who's got kids and have seen the Lego movie? Yeah, and who's actually heard the song too? There's probably more hands for that. Yeah, I have it sung to me in quadraphonic sound with four kids. But I like the movie, so yeah. Everything is awesome, maybe, if we get all this in a line, yeah? If we can address those five things within our adoption of Office 365, then we might just get it right and make the ride a bit easier. So don't overlook those user-centric features in Office 365. They're not there by chance. Some very smart people put some hard work in to make them. And if you've ever seen another presenter sometimes, his name's Dr. Nitin Padanjapi. He's really cool. He'll sit up here and he'll show you all the stuff you don't know about Office. The 5% you do, and he'll say, did you know it can do this as well? We need to point out the user-centric within Office 365 so that they can use it much easier. If you want to show what's in Office 365 and get people to use it, we've got to show them what's in it for them. And at this point, we'll take some questions. I had an inkling that I might have actually tried to set up a Yammer site and get you all from doing this from devices. I tried this at another place. It didn't quite work. I could have had your questions coming in, and I'd be answering them on the screen. Yes? How easy? So the question is, how easy is it to federate and work with other businesses? Right. Okay. So in terms of it's sort of going a little outside user adoption, but it is still part of it. It's actually really easy to be able to federate with other partners. So we do have a couple of options. We can use a Microsoft account and invite people in from external to be part of a site. I like to suggest that when people do that, when organisations do that, they set up their own separate site collection for that sort of purpose. Keep it nice and separate from your internal documents and various things. So there's that option. If the is it perhaps a scenario where the organisation's also using Office 365? No? Okay, so when they are, of course, you know, it's easy to also invite them using those logins, but that's probably the only options that we can look at for federating and working with other organisations. Are you asking also about ADFS and bringing in authentication within different domains? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So we're using the external user invites to do that, and within a Yammer sense, we can also create the external communities to perhaps reference those documents as well. So you've got two places. You can get the community going within an external Yammer network, and you can also have a what I suggest is a separate site collection. Keep it nice and separate from everything and secure, and invite people into your little project sites that you might create in there for your customers and your clients. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you all for sticking around a bit longer and putting your lunch plans off. I'll stick around here for a bit longer if you're a little shy of asking your questions, but thanks for coming.